Welcome to the Rooted in Change podcast.
Hey everyone, my name is Jan and you're listening to the Rooted in Change podcast. This show features European clean tech champions and their solutions to tackle the climate crisis. Today's guest is Margot, co-founder and CEO of Enerdrape. The company takes on the challenge of decarbonizing urban spaces by harnessing the energy directly from underground walls. We'll learn more about how this works in just a second. Welcome, Margot.
Thank you, Jan.
Lovely to have you. My first question is always, what's your background? What's your story? So tell me, who are you as a person and how did you end up co-founding Enerdrape?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Margot. I'm French originally. I grew up in the south of France, in Monaco in particular, which is not in France, but let's say south of France. I arrived in Switzerland to start my engineering studies. So I'm a civil engineer by training. I did a specialization and the focus on energy. So it turns out at the end of my graduation that civil plus energy was really linked to geothermal energy. And yeah, so I decided to go in that direction, and I was offered to stay in the lab I did my master physics with to continue the research on the topic I was working on, which was to integrate geothermal heat exchangers to underground structures. And so I entered the lab as a research assistant, and basically at some point I could either do a PhD on the topic, but I was a bit impatient.
Right.
So I decided to better co-found a startup and to bring the technology on the market instead of continuing to research on this topic.
Yeah, that's really interesting because a lot of people sort of go down the research and PhD route first and then realize, you know, having spent an additional 4 to 5 years or so on that specific topic, that it's then time to start off the company or to start the company, to spin off the company. It was interesting that you just skipped that part and went to founding the company directly. How was that for you, sort of out of the research and not having the PhD credentials in the market? Did that change anything for you?
So no, actually, I don't feel that it does change something. As a matter of fact, a lot of people believe I have a PhD, even if
Right.
I don't have it.
Right.
Because
I mean, that's the best part, right? Like, you didn't spend the time and people still think you have the PhD. It's like double win.
Exactly. That's a win-win because people believe. So I keep sometimes, let's say I keep a little bit the thing around. But yeah, I think in my specific sector, it's not really an issue. I think it depends on the industry. On some specific industry, it's very important to have a PhD. In some others, a bit less. And in any kind, my co-founder has a PhD, and he actually did one part of his PhD on that. My other co-founder is a professor, so we already have, let's say, the trust,
the research,
the
credentials.
Recognition, on their side.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. And then I tried to describe the problem that you solve with Enerdrape in the beginning, but tell me, was that a fair summary, or what is it that Enerdrape actually does?
Yeah, actually, it was really a good summary. So basically, what we are doing is that we tackle, I would say, the energy transition and decarbonization of the building sector as many other solution. The concept is that we have literally an untapped energy potential below our feet, which is geothermal energy. There is a lot of, let's say, possibilities with geothermal. You can do electricity very deep down, but you can do also heating and cooling if you go more in the subsurface. This is what we do with Enerdrape. And basically, the idea or the concept is that we have found a way to do exactly as shallow geothermal energy, but without any drilling or without digging into the ground and being in direct contact with earth. So that's really the main innovation that we bring to the market. We have developed these panels, very thin panels that we attach to walls, underground walls that are already in contact with the ground. So that could be the underground wall of your car park, of tunnels, subway stations, any kind of underground space. We place our panels on the underground structure that is going to capture this heat that is naturally present underground, and that is kind of stored in the wall. And we're going to bring it back to the building as decarbonized heating and cooling thanks to a conventional heat pump system.
Okay, that's really exciting. I have a ton of follow-up questions, so I'll ask the first one. When I first learned about the idea behind Enerdrape, that was so obvious, like it was so obvious somehow to me that, right, we know that, the deeper down into Earth you get, the warmer it gets. So the potential to harness that energy has long been known. And then I guess as humans over the last 50, 100 years, we started to build all these underground structures. You just mentioned subways, car parks, and so on. So, what led you to that realization? I can use all those build structures underground to decarbonize those exact structures, right? Because that's the real challenge that we're facing over and over again, that we're building more complex cities, more complex infrastructures. And then trying to add additional layers of infrastructure on top to decarbonize the system that we built a couple of decades ago. So, sort of, what was the game changer for you to go, all right, this is the solution to a problem?
Yeah, actually, that's more like some kind of iterative process. I would say it's some kind of incremental innovation, if I can say. My co-founder really invented and pioneered this type of technologies. Basically, 20 years ago, he realized that for civil purposes, so for structural engineering, we tend to dig into the ground, pour concrete to support our buildings. And actually, so we are doing this, and on the other side, we dig into the ground to place pipes to harvest geothermal energy. So his first idea was, why don't we mix the two things? So we are digging for structural purposes. Why don't we take this as an advantage to place pipes and harvest geothermal energy as well? So he started to do that, 20 years ago, and there was a lot of research, fundamental research that was held so far. And this basically gave birth to a technology that does this. And me, I was working on that when I was at the lab. But the thing is that I realized, okay, we have this super nice technology that is working and everything. But it's only for new construction. I mean, you need to, you need to have the pipes into the concrete. So it's only for new construction. And 98% of the infrastructure and on the building, on the planets, they're already there. And they will be still there and they will be still standing in 2050, I think 70% of them. So then yeah, that's basically when I was like, maybe we could find a way to do this, to do this exact same thing, but in another way, so we can really retrofit this type of infrastructure. And at this moment, I said that to my future co-founders, and they were a bit like, yeah, actually, we are having also this thing in mind. Yeah, basically, let's try to shift a little bit the existing technology to something that can really do this for existing structures. And that's basically how it came.
And this is also then where the panels come into place, right? Because this is where you merge sort of those, I guess, those two ideas to say, look, we focus on harnessing the energy, but we do it in the already built environment and not just focusing on newly built
Yeah,
buildings.
exactly. There was a need as well to kind of prefabricate the technology so we can really adapt it to existing system. And we had lots of idea. I mean, the first idea was not necessarily a panel per se. We had ideas of drapes. This is actually or like really some kind of curtains, if I can say. We were really thinking of something more flexible at the really beginning, and that's actually what bring the name of EnerDrape. At the really start, it was Energy Drapes, so we tested basically several ideas. At some point, it was even about creating just a methodology with just a way to place the pipes and like put concrete again on top of it. But then there was, let's say, some constraints, a bit, some barriers from the markets. You could not have access to the technology. It was hard to maintain. So all in one, at some point, it became a panel, kind of flexible panel.
And in the most layman terms, so if to someone who's not in the energy sector and doesn't really know about heat pumps and so on, maybe someone who just parks their car in the car park underground and sees those panels. So how does that work? So, the panels harness the energy and feed it back into the building. How?
So basically, so first, something that's when your car, like basically when you park your car in an underground garage, most of the times, let's say, is warmer than outside in winter and it's cooler than outside in summer. This is something that most of us are experiencing,
True,
or it could be the other way around in the southern hemisphere of the globe. And we tend to think that this is due to the fact that the vehicles, the cars, are releasing a lot of heat, which is only partially true. Of course, they are releasing heat, and this is heating a little bit the underground space. But actually, most of this heat is coming from the fact that we are underground. It's really the energy, the heat that is naturally present underground that is some kind of radiating into the underground space. So this is the first thing, which means that basically everywhere in the world, there is a concept, which is the fact that a few meters down underground, the temperature is constant throughout the year. So here, for example, in Switzerland, it's around like 12 degrees, roughly. So that means that it's always 12 degrees underground. So it's always warmer than outside in winter, and the other way around in summer. So what we are doing with EnerDrape is that we are injecting in our panels a fluid, water. So water is flowing inside our panels, and this water is going to be preheated by the fact that it flows in these panels that are like extracting this heat from the walls. And this preheated water is then supplied to what we call a heat pump system, which is a mechanical system that is going to increase the temperature, so then it could be provided to the building. And the advantage of heat pump system is that they really have very high efficiency. So, for example, if you bring 1 unit of electricity to run the system, you will, I don't know, get 4 units of free heat coming from the underground. And so, at the end of the day, you will have 5 units of heat in your dwelling. So, basically, for one unit you input in the system, you actually get 5 equivalent of heat. And to do the comparison, if you have just an electric heater in your dwelling, 1 unit of electricity is actually equivalent to 1 unit of heat. So you have a 1-to-1 ratio. Thanks to heat pump, you can get a 1-to-5, 1-to-4, 1-to-6 ratio. So that's really an advantage. So what we do is that we use our innovative panels to extract this free heat that we can bring to the heat pump. So then the heat pump could be as efficient as it can and provide as much as energy can to the building. I
That was
don't
a very good explanation
know.
for everyone who's not in the sector. Thank you so much. So
No
then
problem.
I'll rephrase this once more to see whether I get it as well. What you're then really offering, because you could also argue that you could only power, or that you could power the built environment with heat pumps only, right? But what you're bringing is sort of that extra level of efficiency, because you're harnessing the free energy that's already there underground, and thereby sort of bringing the additional benefits, and I guess then lowering costs for whoever runs the building, because the amount of energy that they would have to produce, transform through the heat pumps is lower because you're harnessing the free energy. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's correct. And yeah, the heat pump is always working with a source. So it always need a source of free heat, and you have several
Right.
ways to
Normally, what we nowadays often see is the air, for
the air,
example.
exactly. But the tricky thing with air is that the temperature varies a lot around the year. For example, in Sweden, if it's like super cold, then the efficiency is like super low. And the advantage of getting this free heat from the ground is that you have this constant temperature.
Right.
And what we bring as, let's say, an additional advantage with our system is that it's basically is gonna allow the building owner to benefit from this extra efficiency from the ground, where today it could not place conventional
Right.
geothermal systems.
Gotcha. Let's focus on the applications then, because we mentioned sort of a number of them throughout this recording already, from sort of parking garage to, I guess, even office buildings. So sort of where could your technology sit? I would assume anywhere that has a sort of underground built structure.
Yeah, exactly. Anywhere. Yeah, as soon as you have there is an underground build structure, we can actually apply our technology. Then, of course, the question is, do we have a consumer to provide? Because sometimes you have the underground structure, but you don't necessarily have.
Right, like in parking garage, for example, if there's no consumer above ground, it wouldn't make a
Exactly. So there is way to actually still benefit from that is to really build like a network or distant network so you can reach the consumer. So if it's in a very urban and dense city, that's something that is working very well because you have lots of consumers still nearby. But of course, if you're in the middle of nowhere, maybe it doesn't really make sense. For example, I often have the question. So we are based in Switzerland. So we have the Gotthard Tunnel. So it's really like a tunnel that in the middle of that was built in the middle of a mountain, and it's getting super hot in this tunnel. Like it's reaching 50, 60 degrees in summer
Right.
time.
Wow, okay.
So lots of potential for us to harvest this heat. But actually, it's really in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's the middle of the Alps. There is like a very small village nearby, but that's all. So here, for example, of course, technically we can install, but then to whom you
There's
distribute?
nowhere to consume the energy.
Exactly. Basically, we install mainly in urban centers because this is also where the demand is the highest and where it's also the most difficult to access energy, clean energy sources. And yeah, we install in car parks, we install in subways, metro stations, underground tunnels, basements, all that kind of infrastructures.
And people who buy your solution, what makes them sign the contract? What makes them tick the boxes? So I would assume they look at different options to decarbonize their energy demand, but then somehow they land on your solution. So what are your USPs compared to competing solutions to decarbonize?
Yeah, So I would say there, in general, there's several pieces. We are only one piece of the puzzle, you know. It's super hard today to find one solution that does it all. If you find it, do it. But I would say
It's probably the name.
90%, exactly, 90% of the case, it's hard. So our clients approach us for very various reasons, to be fully honest. Some of them, they just have no other solution, and it can really be the last piece that is going to allow them to shift to a fully renewable system. And because sometimes they still, you know, it's still missing a little piece, so they still have to do a hybrid system to keep a little bit of fossil. So this is actually a case we have several times with our clients, is that we really provide them to shift with to this full renewable system. For some others, it's also because they want to increase the self-consumption, and also they want to increase their independence against other types of solution. Because of course there is other types of solution, but not of them are independent of either the grid, the district heating network, gas, geopolitical reason, and so on, especially these days. Another thing that is one of our USP is this constant production that we can provide. This is a case that all geothermal energy systems are sharing, but that's really one of the main advantage, is that the energy, the battery, if I can say, is available 24/7. So when you need it, basically, no matter if it's sunny, if it's daylight, if it's windy, we don't care. We have this constant production that is available. And this is really of importance also for some clients, because they are okay to pay maybe a little bit more, but to have a constant production.
And then looking at the clients, how far have you come? So you mentioned that you're based in Switzerland, founded in Switzerland, and linking back to the personal journey that you described in the beginning, moving out of France to study in Switzerland. So how far has Enerdrape come on its journey?
So we are main. I mean, we have mainly installation and clients as of today in Switzerland. But actually, we are now deployed in four countries. So we are really at the premises of internationalization, but
Nice.
really go further with that. So now we actually we have one project that is being built right now and in France, and we have now also an integrator of the technology in France. We have also a pilot project in Spain and also in the US. So that's pretty cool. Little by little, we are advancing on other markets. And yeah, and the ambition is really to, you know, grow internationally. As I was mentioning, the phenomenon that we are using is really available everywhere in the world. So we have really this potential to go international.
Yeah, and I guess compared to other energy technologies in the market, where I guess regulation is always a big issue, and for PV and so on, you always have to look at the business case. Does it make sense? Is the levelized cost of electricity in terms of production, is that competitive in the market and so on? But I guess with your solution, is you harness ultimately a source that's free and then sort of base load. That's a combination that you don't see often. And yours, as you're integrating into the built environment, that's such a difficult space to decarbonize. And I would assume your solution is not hard to install. It seemed, at least from the images that I've seen, rather simple compared to, tear the whole building down again and sort of reintegrate the pipes into the concrete. That's a whole different ball game. So it feels like you're ticking a lot of the boxes there that make the scale-up journey easier for you.
Yeah, indeed. That's another USP we have. Is super simple to install. That's non-invasive. At the end of the day, it's six screws to install the panels. So very easy and plug and play, which is also the reason why I would say not the reason why, but this is the way we conceptualize it, so it can actually fit existing and built environments because we knew that was the one of the main barrier of the other technologies. But
And
of
I think that's
course,
such an important way for climate tech companies actually to scale up, because if you're not plug and play, if it is hard to integrate, then those sales cycles become incredibly long, and out of a sudden you lose that edge and that momentum. And I feel, as you just said, it's six screws ultimately. Well, yeah, it's not more than that. And I think that's super easy for people to understand, right? We can have a fast pilot. We can look into this. Does it work? Yes, if it works, we go sort of to the whole building portfolio. And it's sort of not rocket science to scale this up. And I think that's the super important part. Maybe even linking back to the initial comment that I made, where I said the original idea seemed so straightforward, so obvious. I think that helps you a lot in terms of the sales process, hopefully, to say, yeah, we know that phenomenon. Yes, the way you described it in layman terms, we've all been in a parking garage in summer, be like, ooh, rather cold in here. And then in winter, it's like, it's quite warm compared to the 0 degrees in Switzerland to Sweden right now. And I think that's the nice part, that people actually can connect that phenomenon that they've realized in their private lives to where you are and where your technology sits.
You're totally right. Most of our clients or fans or community or whatsoever, what they often say is that, okay, it makes sense. And I think that's really my personal view as well, but I think sometimes the simple things or the best ones, and things have to make sense. Sometimes we do very efficient but very complex stuff, and then it's getting hard to sell it. It's getting hard to promote it as well. So it's not as simple as it seems in terms of the tech that is behind. And actually, it was a hard work to make it simple. But yeah, we really work from the beginning to really to develop a hardware, to develop a solution and a methodology that is as simple as it can be for heating contractors to implement. Because I knew that if the guy or the girls that are installing, they find it too complex, they won't install it. And that's one issue we have with clean energy system today. They are more complex than what we were used to do with gas, because it was so simple. You just bring the fuel and that's it, and you push a button. And I believe this is also one of the reason why the energy transition is not going as fast as it could, as it should. So that was really something that we worked on from the beginning to really have an adoption of the market as fast as we can.
And I think that's well phrased to say, the engineering behind is not simple, but the sort of the end product is. And I think this is sort of the Champions League of what you can achieve in terms of engineering and, I guess, creating products and services when they feel and look simple in terms of usage, installation, and so on to the people who have to do that job. But the actual work that has gotten into that project is really hard and sophisticated. And I think that's the beauty of combining something that's really high tech and then looks great and is easy to install. I think that's sort of the Champions League approach of how climate tech should work.
I agree.
Well, you just mentioned the scale-up journey. So sort of what's next for you? So internationalization, but what else could that be?
Yeah, so for us, what's next is, yeah, really getting to other markets, also deploying other applications. As of today, we are really focused more on underground car parks because the type of clients we are reaching are more in that domain. But me, I really see this untapped potential, and what we really want is to tackle larger infrastructures to really provide as much as impact we can. And yeah, and of course, also the next steps is also to make it I would say the more economic as we can for also our customers. As of today, it's in the orders of magnitude as other types of clean energy system, but of course we still have to continue to have labor that are well trained, that are well paid, but still provide as maximum as benefit we can to the clients, because if they don't have benefits, they won't buy it at some point. So that's really one of the next step as well, is to work more on the economics and make it as profitable as we can, basically.
Which I guess also will help when scaling up, those things go hand in hand. So the more you're able to sell and produce, the easier that challenge that you just described will be for you.
Yeah, exactly. That's a bit the snake, that it's like some kind of vicious cycle. At some point, is that you need volume to decrease the price, but to decrease the price and to get the volumes and the orders, you have to have a lower price, and then you have this endless cycle. But I would say that's the tricky thing for any kind of startup and new company. So.
It's an important challenge in scaling up, and I guess you can't take any shortcuts. You just need to continue to do the good work that you do. And that brings me to my second to last question. Looking ahead, you just described sort of where you want to go and how you want to do this. What does Energy look like in 3 to 5 years from now? So I guess an international company still rooted in Switzerland, customers all over the world, but what else is there to the vision of the company?
Yeah, I would say one thing that is really for me, what I really ambition. So if it's 3 or 5 years, that would be great. But maybe it's gonna make a little bit more time. But really, I would say my goal and my objective is that really reach the same market standard or market reference that you have, for example, with solar panels. Basically, we really want to become the next market standard and to become an evidence, in the sense that today, you talk to someone about renewable energy, they're gonna think solar panels. And you have lots of other solutions, but they're gonna think about solar panels. You build a house, you have a roof, you're gonna think solar panel. My ambition, my goal is really that in the next 5, 10 years, you walk in on a new car park in your underground car park, you walk on the station of the underground on the tube in London, you think Energy. Oh, you see cosmetic or advertisement panel, or I don't know what, decorative panel. You say, oh, is it an Energy panel? I really want to reach this evidence in the mind, that's solar panels basically
And I
has
guess also
today.
Climeworks out of Switzerland did. If you think of direct air capture, you think
Yeah.
Climeworks is sort of the company. I find it interesting that whenever that topic comes up, you always see the installations that Climeworks did across the globe.
Yeah.
And I think that's if I understand you correctly, that's the ambition, right? To sort of coin the next big thing there, that wherever you go, and when people think of, well, what could we do with our underground built infrastructure, or sort of that becomes the you Energy become the inevitable go-to solution.
Yeah, exactly. I would say that's really the, yeah,
I
that's
like
really
the
the
ambition.
goal, what we ambition.
Nice. And then the final question that I had for today is, I mean, what makes you get up in the morning and continue on that journey? Because You could have chosen an easier, simpler path, not one that where you have to fight and break a vicious cycle of, sales, volume, price, and so on. So what is it that keeps you going and also leads to, if we look back at the beginning of the conversation, starting at the research lab and then deciding, I don't want to do the PhD, I'd rather start the company instead. So what is it that keeps you moving forward and keeps you motivated to take on those challenges and those risks?
So I think that it evolved a little bit throughout my journey. It evolved sometimes throughout a year. But it's true that this is a question I'm asking myself on sometimes. I'm like, why? Why I'm not doing like very more simple things where you know what to do. They tell you what to do. But yeah, I would say now really what inspires me or really makes me get up in the morning is really I want to see the technology, on the market. I've worked so hard to do this. It's a little bit my baby. I really want to see my baby walk, I think now it's really that. But a few years ago when I started this journey, so first I had no clue of why, where, how, what I was about to do. So it helped a lot because I had really no idea of what entrepreneurship was about. So it kind of helped me to just jump into the water and say, yes, I have a solution. There is a problem. We should do something about it. So yeah, I would say a few years ago, it was more about I was a bit naive, So I just go for it, and yeah, it's really something that inspires me. And I'm an engineer, and I chose to be an engineer because I really like to provide solution to stuff, and I also like to build stuff. As lots of engineers, and I think this was a really great way to do this. We had the tech, we didn't have a product, and the idea of it's okay, now I have this research, I have this thing in my brain, I have these lab results, and I'm gonna really build a product out of it and bring it to the market to solution a problem that was really, let's say, close to what I was imagining as an engineer, and that really what motivated me at the beginning. And yeah, now it's more that given all the work I wrote, I really want to see the baby walk right now. So yeah, that evolved a little bit throughout the year. But now it's really to see the things moving forward with Vendredrape and really to see these panels everywhere. It's really what I want.
Yeah, and I guess the as an engineer, both having the tech solution but then also getting to build the own company is probably sort of double rewarding. While it obviously comes with the challenges, but from what you just described, probably very close to your nature, and I guess the a sense of nativity helps there as well, right? That you just if you don't know what to do yet because no textbook has told you, well, you're going to figure it out because you're curious. And I guess that's the fate of an engineer or someone who works in a lab. You don't know whether it's going to work out, so you'll try until it works, and you're going to find that way that works perfectly for the process, or in that case for the company. So I think for climate tech companies specifically, engineers are very well equipped to run the companies and to lead them to success.
Yeah, exactly. Especially startup, because it's really about try and error. A startup is really that, and you just have. I mean, it's better if you don't do too much errors, but that's really, I would say, at the end of the day, it's really what is it about, and it's true that it's super rewarding, and yeah, and I think it's also very. rewarding at a personal level for any kind of entrepreneurship when something is going great, or you sell something, or you see one of your product in the hands of someone. It's you know, it's a bit like, oh, it's me who did it, that, and this is really also nice and rewarding, and this is, I guess, also why we are continuing to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect summary. So, thank you so much, Margot, for your time today and for the insights into, well, your personal journey, but also Anna Drapes. And then, well, fingers crossed that your vision turns reality very soon without the hiccups on the way, and hopefully not too many mistakes, but rather finding all the right solutions right from the start.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Jan, for the invitation, and yeah, happy to maybe inspire some other guys around the path to join this climate tech journey and to change the world. So happy to have the opportunity to bring my voice on the topic.
Thank you for making the time today. All the best.
Thank you. Bye.